Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast version of Ben and Woods. Thanks for finding us wherever you are, radio.com, downloading the radio.com app, or, of course, you can listen to us on your smart speaker and make sure you subscribe so you get our content every single day.
Absolutely. And there's lots of other podcasts from other hosts here in the building and here at 97.3. Make sure to check those out as well. But right now, back to Ben and Woods.
You're always dancing down the street with the sway blue eyes. Every new boy that you meet, he doesn't know the real surprise.
Here she comes again.
That's my car's jam.
That is your jam.
Very nice. Ben and Woods here, final hour on a Monday. Thank you for all joining us, Tier 1s. You've been here since the start. If you listen on your way to work, we really appreciate that. But there's other times you can listen too. Hey, get up. Use your smart speaker. Say, hey, let's turn on 97.3 The Fan. And you can listen to Ben and Woods and you're getting ready for us as well. We appreciate all the extra, any extra listening you can do. Very appreciated.
And telling your friends. That's always
that
fun.
Helps also. Yes. Yeah. Get the word out. We've only been here 3 months.
90 days.
I mean, it takes a lot of, it can take years for people to find someone at a new station. I mean, you get the stories like, oh, you guys are still on the air? Like, oh, yeah, we switched. Oh, I didn't realize that.
I saw a lady at breakfast yesterday at Bestowan in Cardiff. She goes, oh, where are you guys now? I said, well, we're at 97.3. She goes, oh, I used to listen to you every morning. I'm like, great. You still can. We're on.
Right, so get the word out. You know, we can't tell everybody. We rely on you guys to help us out for so, so much. We would love for you to help us out in this segment. I'd love to hear from you. 833-288-0973. Big announcement last night in all of San Diego, not just for sports fans, but in the city in general, that the Giant Kaboom Music Festival, which has been the past 5 years at the fairgrounds up in Del Mar, is moving to Petco Park next year, September 18th through the 20th, 2020. Kaboo on the field, at the Park of the Park,
yep.
The Lexus lot, the tailgate lot. They're going to have all their stages and tents set up with all their musical acts. It is coming next year downtown. The first reaction I saw, though, came from Padres fans.
Panic.
Who were...
Panic.
Like, hold on. This is right before the final homestand of the season next year. 2 days before... On September 22nd, the Padres will face the Minnesota Twins and then the LA Dodgers for the final six games of the year in what they say is like the opening of their window, the first season that they're going to be competing for the playoffs. So what is the deal here? What's going to be happening to the field? Is there going to be any problems for the Padres?
What's the problem?
Not only in the last homestand, but what if they are in the playoffs? I mean, how is that going to look? Is there going to be anything damaging out there? That's the question that I think a lot of Padres fans were asking.
Well, I said it this morning when we first started talking about this. I understand. After 9 straight losing seasons, I understand the doom and gloom mentality. I really do, and feel it a little bit myself. That being said, I can't get myself worked up into a lather about something that may or may not happen. They may not be able to get the field fixed in time for the series against the Twins. They may, but they may do a great job. I know we have a phenomenal grounds crew here. I'm not gonna say they're gonna fail today, a year in advance. I'm not going to panic. Here's the other thing. I don't think it sends any kind of message to your team, okay, that says you're out. We think you're gonna be out of it, so we're gonna host a concert. What is this? The first concert that's ever been held at a baseball stadium in the season? It's not. Billy Joel played Fenway over the weekend. Red Sox had a pretty good year last year, real good year. In fact, they won the World Series. It happens. It happens all the time. There's no reason to freak out yet. I understand the doom and gloom panic. I do. But there is absolutely nothing to be upset about today in 2019. Now, if they don't get that field, what they did do, though, Ben, they opened themselves up to a little bit of criticism and a little bit of panic. Because if we get there and the field's not done and the field does suck and it's dead, then you're in trouble. I mean, then you are in serious. You're in trouble from us. You're in trouble from the fans. Then you're going to hear it. And that's, hey, that's a risk they're willing to take.
As long as the field is safe, there's really nothing to complain about. I mean, yeah, if there's some discoloration on the field,
there will be,
but the grass is fine. All right, you know what? That's not going to affect the pennant race. It's really not. Will it look ideal? No, but it tends to be very warm in September. You water it, it bounces back really quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some discoloration for that last homestand of the season. You know, hopefully if they do make the playoffs and you're hosting a playoff game, you would like it to look as good as possible. I mean, you want that thing to look baseball sharp. If you're playing an October game and it looks kind of, ruddy, I mean, it's like when the Chargers would have to play at the Merv on the baseball field in September. The Raiders still do it last season, in Oakland, where they have to share a field. It just looks bad for football when you've got a baseball diamond out there. Looks bad for baseball when you have big splotches in the outfield. It's not great grass. But it shouldn't affect the play on the field.
I mean, yeah, as long as it's safe.
You're not looking down when you're playing baseball. If they had a fly ball to center field, Manuel Margot's looking up in the air, trying to catch it. As long as the grass is safe, the ground is good, then I don't have an issue with it. Yeah, of course, if there is a safety issue, then this is a disaster.
Yes,
and the Padres would deserve a ton of criticism.
But I'm not going to criticize them a year early. Like, there's plenty of time. There's plenty of things to criticize about the play on the field and everything else right now. Hey, you guys, and actually, like, I'm so happy that Caboo is going to stay in San Diego, and I'm so happy that it's not going to be in Del Mar anymore, because the people in Del Mar never really wanted it. The volume has to be really low, and it's a really early curfew. People downtown are kind of used to the chaos of living downtown. I'm really excited to see what it looks like. The lineup's always pretty good, and some big names and everything else, but I think it's going to be cool. I think it's going to be really crowded. I think it's going to be really congested downtown. But, I mean, hey, didn't we want a football stadium? We wanted stuff. We wanted to do more stuff. We wanted stuff to stay in San Diego, didn't we?
Yeah.
Isn't that what everybody wants?
Yeah. I mean,
we got it, and now we're going to complain about it.
That was one of the arguments for building Petco Park. We need a better outdoor venue than, the Qualcomm Stadium, SDCCU Stadium in Mission Valley. And now we have one. Well, clearly, if you were if you're a band, Woods, and you want to play a big outdoor show in San Diego, do you want to play at SDCCU Stadium? Do you want to play at the Del Mar Fairgrounds? Or would you like to play at Petco Park? I mean, for me, it'd be easy. I'd want to play at Petco Park.
I would, too. I mean, it's always – and, again, the Cubs do this. The Yankees do this. The Red Sox do this. This is a smart, smart move for San Diego. It's great for all the local businesses and everything else downtown and the hotels and all the stuff that we say a lot that we like to support. When we get a chance, we get upset about the field a year early. I'm not going to get upset about it a year early. If they botch the field, there should be hell to pay.
I'd like to know that. I mean, the next time that we have Ron Fowler on a Friar Friday, I'm certainly going to ask him about it. I mean, I'd like to know what steps they can take to minimize the impact in terms of, we'll be setting up a lot of the stuff on the field at the last minute. We'll hire extra people. We've got after a few years of doing these concerts, I imagine they've learned a thing or two about the best way to set up the field so that it has as little of an impact on the playing surface as possible. I want to know what, because I guarantee you they didn't just sign up for this and they're finding out today, oh, we're going to have to get it ready for a game in 2 days. No, of course not. They would not have, they would have not gotten into this without discussing all the contingencies and knowing that they had some sort of plan. But until I hear from them, I'm curious as to what that plan is to just make it as minimal of an impact as possible on the Padres season.
Yeah, it's going to be fine. People are getting worked up.
It's not the only big show next year. In July, they're having that big Green Day, Weezer, Fallout Boy concert at Petco Park as well.
I mean, this one's going to be nuts. There's a lot of people that go to Caboo, the people that fly in for it. It's a festival. It's a festival they're trying to grow. Couldn't be happier that it's out of Del Mar. I'm excited to see it. I'm dreading getting down there, getting down there and matriculating into the...
public transportation will be your friend.
Yeah, yeah. If I had a jetpack, maybe that would actually be the best way, because it's going to be...
I think with downtown, though, the trolley will help a lot more. Because, I mean, Del Mar right now, you either drive yourself or you're taking Uber or Lyft or whatever. I mean, kind of the same. There's the one way in and the one way out. At least with downtown, you could take the trolley. They run on the tracks. There's no, they're not really held up by traffic.
This narrative, though, that Jason is tweeting me right now, that if you're looking at contending for something, this tells me they don't expect to contend, is the most tired garbage narrative that you could have. Because they booked Caboo means that they don't expect to contend in September. It's garbage. Billy Joel, Fenway, 2 days ago. The Red Sox expect to contend. They won the World Series. Right? Am I wrong here? Like, does this in any way say, hey, we're probably going to be out of it, so it doesn't matter what the field looks like? It's garbage. It's
now,
a garbage
now,
narrative.
Now, if you bring in, let's say, like, the Republican National Convention, and it's going to take 3 weeks, and you're going to have to go on a road trip for 24 straight games on the road in September to accommodate that event, yeah, I would definitely question whether or not you're thinking you're going to be winning next season. Yeah, they're on the road. I mean, it's just a regular road trip. I think they play on the 10th, and then they go on a three-city trip, like a lot of trips are at that point in the season, and then they come back after Caboo is over for their final homestand of the year. There's nothing totally out of the ordinary weird about that. So, yeah, I did see a lot of that. Oh, you think the Padres are going to be contending? Ha, ha, ha.
I mean, that's a whole separate issue that has nothing to do with Caboo, right? I mean, that has nothing to do with Caboo, whether the Padres are contending or not. But what it doesn't say to me, if I'm a Padre or a Padre fan, is, well, we're having Caboo, so clearly we're not going to be in the race.
All right, we can take some phone calls on this coming up. 833-288-0973 if you've got some thoughts. People are obviously tweeting us. At Ben and Woods. Woods, I just want to play a little game with you.
I like games.
I set up a little Padres player comparison.
Okay.
And see if you can, how much you've been paying attention and if you can identify them. That
not
is
much.
Coming up, AJ Cassaville is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. All right, Woods, are you ready to play my... This is not real or fake. This is real. This is all real. But I'm going to make you play another game here this morning with me.
Shoot.
I set it up. I have three player statistics here from the San Diego Padres.
Okay.
And I want you to identify the player based solely on their on-base percentage and slugging percentage.
Got it.
You ready?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Maybe you want to write these down.
All right, here we go.
All right, player A. 326 on-base percentage, 436 slugging percentage. Player B, 330 on-base percentage, 431 slugging percentage. Player C, 336 on-base percentage, 463 slugging percentage. You got all three of those?
I do.
All right, the first impression you got from those numbers, kind of throw a blanket over them. I mean, not exactly equal, but also... not that different. I mean, they all have an OPS from 760 to 800. You know, basically similar seasons from all three players. And I'll tell you this, all three have played the majority of the year healthy. I don't know if anyone has spent time on the injured list. So, majority of the season healthy, significant number of at-bats, so strong sample size. All right, here we go. Player A. 326 on-base percentage, 436 slugging percentage. Who do you think that is?
Ah, you threw me with the injury. So I was going to say Hunter Renfro.
No. None of them are Hunter Renfro.
All right. Manny Margot.
No.
This sucks. I hate this game.
All right. Player B, 330 on-base percentage, 431 slugging percentage. So about four higher on base, five lower slugging than player
Hosmer.
A. No.
This is going really
this
well.
This is awesome. Yeah, I really love these
game.
Games.
And then player C is the 336 OBP, 463 slugging.
I mean, 336 OBP, I don't know. That's too early for this.
All right, so here you go. Here are your three players. They
right,
are
shoot.
Eric Hosmer was one.
I said Hosmer.
Will Myers is two. Manny Machado is three.
Oh, wow.
Will Myers, who's had his disastrous season that everyone can't wait to get rid of him, just the worst player on the Padres. Manny Machado, Eric Hosmer, the two studs who are getting all the money, Will Myers, his numbers at the end of the year are right in the same ballpark as Hosmer and Machado. What does that tell you? Where are you going now? Where is your mind taking you after this little exercise that we've done?
It's saying, well,
are people being too hard on Myers? Is Manny Machado not really?
Are we not being hard enough?
Are we not being hard enough on Machado and Hosmer when you look at their numbers? Because those three guys have had very similar seasons. And Will Myers is basically the guy everyone can't wait to trade, but you can't get rid of him because of his salary. And the other two are cornerstones at first and third base. For, you know, the next 5 to 10 years, depending on contracts. Why do we feel this way? What is it about Will Myers that, I mean, is it just because he's been around longer that everyone has just gotten tired of the word potential when it comes to Will Myers for so long?
It's a really good start to the season and a really good ending to the season. The middle was crap.
It was.
It was, like, less than crap. I mean, it was horrible, and he was being benched for lesser players, people that had less talent than him. So I forgive me if I look, nobody wants Will Myers to be a consistent great player more than me, but I get it.
Timing is part of it, but I mean, you know, baseball is supposed to be the sport where, hey, get rid of just the slumps, look at the numbers as a whole at the end of the season, then evaluate. If Will Myers finishes the way he has hits in 13 of his last 14 games, had a home run yesterday. And Manny Machado, who's been in a slump, you know, kind of continues to slump. At the end of the year, Will could have a higher batting average, higher on-base percentage, and right about the same slugging percentage as Manny Machado. So have the same season, essentially, as Manny.
Well, I mean,
what do you do with that
information? In those two categories, right? I mean, in
on-base and slugging.
Right. I mean, in those two.
Defensively, obviously, Manny Machado's a much better player.
Power. You know,
power is a slugging's power. So
slugging is yeah. You know, doubles.
I think
in a
Will has 18 homers. Manny's got 30,
yep.
But Manny has more at bats too. He's played almost every single day.
Yep.
Will has gone stretches where he's, you know, ridden the pine and only come in as a bench player. You give Will Myers the same number of at bats, he might be right around 30 home runs this season as Manny Machado.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know. I think what Manny brings defensively, obviously, is a big thing, and he's a cornerstone that has gone out and played every day for you when Will Myers has struggled mightily for 3-4 month stretches at a time, Benny. Yeah, I mean, a nice September is nice, but 28 games out at this point, I'm not discounting what he's been able to do recently. But, I mean, we just got swept in Colorado. I don't know that coming in and waving the flag, you know, against two guys that have been playing every day for a guy that was a platoon player that's had a nice September and a nice end to his August is the right move. I don't know. I mean, it's up to you. I mean, you can, it's the manipulation of the numbers, though. Yeah, you can make a case that, hey, not a bad year for Will.
I'm trying to not manipulate the numbers. I'm just looking at the entire season as a whole. I mean, that is as little manipulation as you can do with numbers. It, you know, get rid of all the slumps, hot and cold, and just look at the entire season, what it actually was. And what it actually was...
How many more ABs for Hosmer and Manny than Will?
I didn't write down the total number of at-bats.
I would guess a substantial amount, right?
Not insignificant would be my guess. Let's see. So Manny Machado has 551, Hosmer 573. They leave the team. Will Myers 406. So about 160 fewer at-bats.
Right.
For Will Myers, 2 fewer homers than Hosmer, 12 fewer than Manny Machado.
Okay, yeah, I mean he's had a really nice last.
If Will Myers is a starting in one of the outfield spots in corner outfield for the, you know, start of next season, is there going to be a riot among Padres fans?
No, and I don't think there should be. Do you? I think has he?
Well, I don't know that there should be. I think that might end up having to be the best solution that the Padres have is to continue to play Will Myers. But I guarantee you, the first time he goes into a slump next year,
it's going to be rough.
And it's going to happen.
It's going to be rough,
whether
man.
It's in April, May, whenever, and he goes in a 2-week span where he's striking out a bunch, it is going to be very, I mean, people are going to say, you're not trying to win. You're putting Will Myers out there. You're just throwing the white flag up on the season. But I'm trying to show you that can't really be the case if you're being fair and honest with the numbers, the kind of season that Will Myers is at. 15 stolen bases versus 5 for Machado, none for Hosmer. So you get some speed on the base paths. He has struck out a lot. 154 strikeouts in less at-bats. That's really the that's the worst statistic for Will Myers this season. The strikeout rate has been really abysmal.
It has been. And Will Myers, I think, has... I mean, Ben, they're writing articles in the paper, like, 6 weeks ago, like, what's wrong with Will Myers? And where is his head? And I, you know, the speaking of tired narratives on Twitter, I don't buy the Will Myers doesn't care thing, and I think that probably needs to be put to bed. Because I know that he has worked extremely hard this season to right the ship, and what he's doing now has been great. It's like he's forgotten about everything, and he's just squaring up fastballs and just looking for a fastball. And when he gets it, he pummels it, and that's been phenomenal to see. We need you. We want you. They're about to be paying you a ton of money, Like, you've got to produce, and I think he knows that. And I'm not gonna sit here and say, well, September numbers don't matter, anything like that. I'm not. I think it's been a nice bookended season for Will Myers because he started white hot. White carried this team to 11-5, carried them. He was unbelievable, and then he disappeared until 6 weeks ago.
September numbers may not matter if you're just playing other teams that are out of contention,
right?
But if you're playing, you know, Cubs, Brewers, you know, Dodgers, teams that are fighting going to the playoffs, well, why would September numbers might matter more than any other numbers? Because you've got teams that are desperate.
They're dying, yeah.
You know, putting their best starters out there. They need absolutely to win. If you're producing against those teams, that's not insignificant. So the other point with Will Myers, and I heard this from A.J. Cassavell when he was on the game broadcast with Jesse Agler and Tony Gwynn Jr. yesterday, is Will Myers hits righties a lot better than a lot of the other righties on the Padres roster, and they need
desperately
guys who can hit righties, and he's one of them. That makes him a more valuable commodity than I think some people are giving him credit for. So we will talk with A.J. Cassavell from MLB.com. He's going to join us next. We'll wrap up some of the top football stories. Again, if you missed the breaking news, Drew Brees likely out 6 weeks with torn ligaments in his throwing thumb. That came down just a little while ago. So we'll talk some more football coming up here at the end. That is all next with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Well, I mentioned the Drew Brees news, likely out 6 weeks with a torn ligament. Ben Roethlisberger, apparently they're going to decide today whether Ben Roethlisberger needs surgery on his elbow. He doesn't want it, but doctors may say, doesn't matter what you want, it's not going to get better without surgery.
Didn't look good, man. Didn't look good at all.
Yeah, he looked like a pitcher coming off the mound, heading to Tommy John surgery, basically, grabbing his elbow like it was hanging off his arm like that.
I mean, he has not looked good. He hasn't looked good early. Maybe that's the deal. Maybe it's time to shut it down in Pittsburgh and kind of revamp and you know, like you said earlier, tank for Tua. It could be the end of the road, man. The guy's getting a little bit older. He takes a lot of punishment, and just he's not right. He's not right at all. And it's a bummer for the Saints, too, man. 6 weeks without Drew Brees. There's a couple winnable games in there. They've got Teddy Bridgewater, and they got Taysom Hill that can do some things as well. But, man, Drew Brees is a G. He's, like, one of the best to ever do it. So that's a huge loss.
We'll have more time to wrap up week 2 of the NFL season this week. But about to head out to chat with our friend A.J. Cassavell from MLB.com. And Ben Woods brought to you by Golf Mart, home of the 90-day 100% satisfaction guarantee. And joining us right now on our SDCCU fan hotline from MLB.com, wrapping up another long summer covering the San Diego Padres, is A.J. Cassavell. And I heard him on the game broadcast yesterday, got the special invitation into the booth from Jesse Agler and Tony Gwynn Jr. Did a very nice job. AJ, it's good to have you on this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We got 2 weeks to go. Let's wrap this thing up strong.
AJ, you excited about Caboo?
I can never be excited about Caboo because I will never be there because it'll always be when I'm on the road, right?
Yeah, you'll definitely, now it's guaranteed to always be when you're on the road.
True.
Because the Padres will be on the road during Caboo. Good point, AJ.
I think it has been in the past too, because I've never been able to go. So that's not a thing that's at the forefront of my mind.
So, are you still in Denver, or are you already in Milwaukee? How does that work?
I'm in neither, so I get a series off a month, and Milwaukee just so happens to be the one. This was a pretty, from a writer perspective, this was a pretty logistically difficult trip. So the series I get off this month is going to Milwaukee, when going from Denver to Milwaukee after a game at Coors Field on a Sunday for a game at a different time zone the next day would have been tough. So this is the one I'm off. I'll still be working. I'll still be doing a few things, but I won't be covering the games. We have another guy in Milwaukee to fill in for me.
So I thought some good info that you had yesterday with Jesse and Tony on the air. One topic that came up, we were just talking about him, is Will Myers, who's going to end up with numbers at the end of the season after this hot streak that aren't going to be that far off Manny Machado and Eric Hosmer. I just did a little comparison, yet obviously a very different feeling between two cornerstones and a guy that you'd think the Padres would try to unload if they could get any takers and probably won't this offseason. What do you think the plan is going forward for Will Myers? What options will the Padres have going into the 2020 season?
I think they'll explore trades, and I really don't know how much this late hot streak helps, because there is such a track record of what he's done poorly in the past, which is kind of go through these peaks and valleys, and I think a lot of us probably could have predicted the way his season went. A lot of very difficult struggles and some really, really high highs. And so if there are no takers, and I'm sure the Padres will explore all their options, they're not going to trade him for basically nothing. If there are no takers, he could be a piece, because I said this yesterday, the way the outfield's constructed, they have Hunter Renfro and Manuel Margot, who torch left-handed pitching. They're presumably going to go out and try and find a left-handed bat in the offseason, and then maybe Francisco Cordero or Josh Naylor or Nick Martini, one of those guys who can hit righties pretty well. And Will Myers is the guy who does both. And you're not going to carry a six-man outfield and platoon everyone. And so I think it's incredibly valuable to have that guy that plays against both pretty routinely, can hit both kinds of pitching. I think they feel that way about Hunter Renfro in some settings, but Will Myers' platoon splits are more even than anyone else's.
We're talking to A.J. Casavell here on Ben and Woods this morning. And, you know, this series in Colorado, like the last series in Colorado, it's nuts. I mean, almost had to come back on Friday night. You know, it's ugly baseball, though, and the Padres seem to really not be comfortable playing at Coors Field. In your opinion, when you watch, you know, the guys that were running out there in all the series in Colorado this year, what's missing? Like, who is the successful pitcher at Coors Field? Is he the high velo guy? Is he the sinker guy? Because I know that even the Rockies have had trouble figuring that out.
Yeah, I think if there was a solution, maybe that person would be the general manager of the Rockies and figured things out, and they would have had a pretty good pitching staff right now. But
we're real bad. We're real bad.
Yeah, and that's to me, that's the thing that, like, I tweet about how bad they're pitching in Colorado, and the response is Coors. Well, it's not Coors. This Padres pitching staff this year was historically bad even for Coors, at Coors. So I believe their ERA was something like 10.67, which is almost three full runs higher than anyone else to ever play three series there. And so they need to figure something out. I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all issue. I think there are certain guys, like Joey Lucchese's had success there in the past, and he's pitched pretty well there in the past. A few things go against him Friday night. I wouldn't be worried about Joey Lucchese. I think, to me, the thing is, you kind of can't be scared to pitch at Coors. You kind of can't feel the overwhelming nature of – you almost have to go to the mound and kind of accept that you're going to give up four runs. And if you can do that, maybe it'll prevent you from giving up eight runs. If you just kind of go out there and execute your pitches, and then when you give up a two-run bomb that should have been a fly out to right field, you can take the ball the next time and say, you know what, I'm going to make the next pitch. To me, that's the key, and that's not a great answer, because you're not going six innings of one run ball. But I think there's a lot of guys on the Padres pitching staff, and for the most part, Coors Field isn't in their head. But when you look at a guy like Eric Lauer and the struggles he's had, and maybe some of the other young guys, something needs to change. I thought what Andy Green said on Saturday night was interesting. It was kind of a foreshadowing of the 2020 rotation, and he said, we will keep this in mind when we're constructing what we're doing in 2020, which to me sounds like they will avoid Eric Lauer altogether in Coors Field if indeed he's in the rotation.
It sounded very threatening, like Dad was angry. We're going to keep this in mind going forward. It was not a
It's about time.
I heard that as well. But when you look at that 2020 rotation, you know, there's a chance. I mean, that maybe not a likelihood, but certainly a chance that all three of the starters who pitched this weekend in Coors might not make the rotation next year. I mean, if the Padres go out and pick up a newcomer, as there's been talk that they might do in trade or free agency, and, you know, Chris Paddock and Garrett Richards, who's going to start tonight, and Denelson Lamet, and, you know, if Mackenzie Gore pulls a Paddock and makes the starting rotation to start next year, well, there's five guys. Now, They're going to have to rely on more than five starters. I think that that's one of the things the Dodgers have done well, AJ, is that they've had Ross Stripling and other swing guys who can be that sixth starter to you know, fill the gap when someone gets injured for a couple of weeks here or there. It's so important, and maybe Joey Lucchese's that guy. How do you see that 2020 rotation breaking down?
Yeah, to me, that's the most interesting question the rest of the season. I think you pretty much nailed the basics of it. It's Chris Paddock's going to be in it. He's done pretty much everything you could have asked for from a rookie. And then Garrett Richards is going to be in it. You've committed $15.5 million to him. You want to at least see what he's got. And when he's good, he's maybe one of the top 20 pitchers in baseball if he can return to that version of himself. I'm not saying he will because he's gone through a lot of injuries. So those are two guys. I think they go out and get someone in the offseason. I'm not sure what they give up to get a guy like Noah Syndergaard or someone they might sign. I'm not sure what they have to give up to get theirs. I don't know who's out of the mix. But I think they go out and get someone who's more of a frontline guy this offseason, too. So all of a sudden, that's three. They're not going to go with the six-man rotation they've had this year. They might do it at times to give guys extra rest, but for the most part, it's going to be five. So now you've got a lot of pretty guys who've been in the rotation pretty easily without much competition for the last couple seasons. Now all of a sudden, they've got to really fight for those jobs. And I think that's what the Padres want. That's kind of what they've been trying to create, and they haven't had that. And I think it's been frustrating to some people because it's been I don't want to say there's been no accountability, but it's almost been like, well, when you struggle, the struggles are almost allowed because there's no real other option. Next season, I would guess there will be a shorter leash on some of these guys when they struggle, and the rotation race in the spring will be pretty tight. I think guys like Eric Lauer, Joey Lucchese, Nelson Lamet, they're all important pieces in the sense that you can't really win a chair, make a playoff spot without digging deeper into your rotation than the five guys you have. You mentioned what the Dodgers have done. But for them to be in the season opening rotation, they still have something to prove.
Talking to AJ Cassavell from MLB.com here on Ben and Woods. So sure you saw yesterday the Amarillo Sod Poodles claiming the Texas League title in their inaugural season. And it came on a ninth inning grand slam by Taylor Trammell, who of course was the outfielder of the Padres got from the Reds in the three-way trade that sent Franmil Reyes to the Indians. He got off to such a slow start, played so well in the playoffs. What do you project for Trammell in terms of next season? I assume we'll see him in big league camp. Is he really someone they'd look at as a potential guy who could make the opening day roster, or is he still a few months away at best?
I think he'd have to blow them away in spring training to make the opening day roster. I think he's still a few months away, and even then it's a kind of get your feet wet situation. And that's why the Padres have some pieces to add this offseason. All of those pieces don't have to be at the level of Noah Syndergaard. I think they need to add a left-handed outfield bat who can hit against righties and start against righties and then sit against all lefties. Maybe like a Corey Dickerson, Nick Markakis. I don't know. Off the top of my head, I haven't looked at all those guys down the line. But if they can kind of balance the offense, they don't need to do it for the long haul. If you can kind of bridge that gap to when Taylor Trammell's ready, maybe when Josh Naylor's hitting a little bit better, then all of a sudden you just kind of set yourself up for success in 2020 and down the road. So I like Taylor Trammell's future. He's not the answer for 2020, and I'm not sure that the Padres do have a lefty hitting outfield bat answer for 2020.
AJ, I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed your coverage all season long. Great job in the booth yesterday with Jesse and Tony Gwynn Jr. as well. Enjoy your series off, and then a strong finish to the year for the last couple of weeks here, AJ. Let's take it all the way to the finish line. We don't want to slack at all just because it's September.
Yep, let's do it. Finish strong.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, AJ. AJ Cassavell on our SDCCU fan hotline. SDCCU has low auto loan rates, as low as 3.15% APR. Apply today at SDCCU.com. I think AJ
is
really smart guy.
Very.
When it comes to baseball. When I read his stuff, it's very insightful. He does his homework. He's there. He's with the team, travels a ton with them. So you could definitely learn something by following AJ Cassavell and listen to what he has to say.
Yeah, he's been great. He's been great all season long. I'm sure his job gets harder and harder as the season progresses. But tonight, something to be, you know, obviously if you need a reason to go watch the Padres tonight, Garrett Richards' return to the mound, it's pretty exciting. And I know he's worked really hard to get back. I wonder what kind of limitations he's on tonight as well. Is this just a welcome back, man. You've earned it. You know, we're out of it. Get out there and give us everything you got, and let's just make sure everything holds up. And I think it's a reward for a lot of hard work to get back, because I don't think any of us expected to see him on a bump this year. So
yeah, I think I saw 60 to 65 pitches is probably you can really expect. So maybe four innings,
yeah.
You know, if things go well. And obviously, Milwaukee is a good hitter's park as well, and they've got a team that is just battling for a playoff spot at the end of the season.
Yeah, no Yelich. Obviously, he's out for the rest of the year. No Mike Trout for the rest of the year. Found that out this weekend. That's a bummer. Bummer for the game. No Ohtani. Ohtani's out for the rest of the year.
Is it a bummer for you?
Yeah.
Are you really bummed about Mike Trout?
Well, I mean, I love Mike Trout. But
But you know what that means.
I mean, he's still going to probably win the MVP.
Maybe, but they might want to give it to a Yankee instead.
Nah, DJ LeMahieu was the only guy kind of sniffing around. He's cooled off a lot. But there's no way you're going to give an MVP to DJ LeMahieu over Mike Trout. Even though, depending on how you rate value, most valuable, I don't know. I mean,
well, if there are certain guys who will only vote for a player on a winning team.
Yeah.
Because the idea is, and you know, it's their opinion, and they're entitled
they got the
to
vote.
It,
yeah.
That you can't be valuable unless you've been helping your team win. So if your team's not winning and the Angels have about the same record as the Padres, how can Mike Trout be the MVP of the league?
By the way, breaking news. More breaking news
more
from
breaking
the NFL.
News.
Ian Rappaport, Chris Mortensen, Ben Roethlisberger out for the season.
Okay.
More coming on SportsCenter.
I told you earlier.
Elbow injury.
When Drew Brees was announced, going to probably be out 6 weeks. Not good for the Saints, but don't just throw the season in the trash can. There is certainly a path where the Saints can tread water with Teddy Bridgewater, get to the bye week in the middle of the year.
You could totally see them making the playoffs.
Finish strong with Drew Brees. And, hey, even if they sneak in at 9-7, if they've got Brees and they're playing well at the end,
they can win.
No one is going to sleep on the Saints in the playoffs. No one would be stunned if they pulled when Aaron Rodgers did exactly that. The Packers got off to a terrible start. I think he was kind of hurting them early in the year. Went 9-7, snuck in, ended up winning a Super Bowl.
Yep.
I mean, the Saints could do that. The Steelers cannot. Steelers season, I think, is done without Ben Roethlisberger. And probably I don't want to call it a dynasty because they haven't won enough against the Patriots to be a dynasty. But the Pittsburgh Steelers have clearly been number two over the years to the Patriots.
Oh, big
during
time.
The Patriots era, they've been the second best team in the AFC. I think that has now come to an end with this news on Ben Roethlisberger.
There you go. Fantasy owners, unload Big Ben right now. Just drop him. Don't even worry about putting him on IR. Boot him.
How many fantasy teams is he on?
I know.
I don't even
know.
It's probably not a
backup
those,
somewhere.
Yeah, panic moves.
I had Ben Roethlisberger on my fantasy team like every year for like 8 years.
But that ended like 5 or 6 years ago probably.
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
But as long as he had Antonio Brown.
He was slinging it,
He's going to get his numbers.
So interesting that... when you look at the careers of the three guys drafted in 2004, Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, and Ben Roethlisberger, you know, Big Ben and Eli have the rings. Eli has certainly fallen off a cliff last couple of years. Ben looks like he may be at the end. I mean, can you really see him missing a season, going through all that
coming
rehab
back.
To come back for maybe one more year? I mean, I wouldn't do it if I were him. I'd just say, okay, I'm done. Career's over. But some guys can't go out that way. Some guys just refuse to say, I'm not going to let this injury be what takes me out. I want to go out on my terms. But what is left? I mean, if I'm the Steelers, I'm hoping now, you know, 1-15 and get Tua and just, play him next year. And
just crush it.
Move
yeah.
on.
Just tank it.
Something like that. And, you know, you got to start thinking about the future. The Ben Roethlisberger era, whether he's retired or not, is now in the past tense for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I was thinking it's just interesting because, I mean, if you're starting a team, if you could go back in hindsight, Philip Rivers probably the highest-rated quarterback of those three. But in terms of Hall of Fame, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger going to be in the Hall of Fame, and Eli Manning's going to be a first-ballot Hall of Famer. And I think there's still the question.
I still don't know about that for Eli Manning.
You hate Eli Manning. He's got two Super Bowls, two Super Bowl MVPs.
The Manning name.
He's going in.
I guarantee. I will bet you anything he's a first ballot.
I don't know that he'll be in the first.
He is going in 100%.
He's the worst quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Maybe
so
the worst.
Lucky, though.
He got so lucky.
So lucky, and the rest of his career has been better than mediocre, but not a lot better than mediocre. I mean, if he gets in, he will be one of the most mediocre players in the Hall of, in any Hall of Fame in any sport.
He's got big numbers.
I'm not saying he won't get in.
He's not Harold Baines, but he's got big numbers.
I mean, I could probably, over the course of Eli Manning's career since 2004, I could probably name 20 quarterbacks who have been better than him over that period. 20.
Yeah, how many Super? I mean, it matters. The championships, two Super Bowl MVPs.
I'm not ignoring it. It's such an interesting case study comparison of those three guys.
It's the old Charger fan coming out in you, though.
If you were the Chargers, you could go back and you had a time machine and you could make that decision for AJ Smith. You know, 2004. Would you do it differently? Would you? Oh no, we should have taken Ben. Oh no, we should have kept Eli. I don't know that you would have, even knowing you have the Super Bowls. It's such a weird thing to know that you still can't tell which guy is the best quarterback after all this time. You can still debate between the three of them, and there's no definitive answer.
Another interesting story just came across my feed, Ben. Sports Illustrated just released, it says exclusive, kind of an in-depth thing on Antonio Brown with some new information that maybe people weren't aware of. That doesn't paint him in a good light at all. If we already knew that he wasn't in a good light, it paints him in a worse light. A lot of domestic issues that hadn't come to light yet, a couple of weird behavior, another sexual assault incident. Mike Freeman actually retweets and says, if he wasn't already going on the exempt list, this guarantees it. Wow. A range of accusations, including a previously untold account of sexual misconduct.
So you're saying that basically Antonio Brown's going to play one game. It's going to be against my fantasy football team, where I got obliterated this weekend, and then he'll never play again. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for that, fantasy football schedulers.
Yeah, well, here we go. Now he's back in our dominating our news cycle again.
So at least I am tied for the lead in our 100-person NFL Pick'em Pool.
Yeah, and I'm right behind
you. First place, and you and Paul are one win behind.
We are
red hot when it comes to our football picks to start the season.
Do you remember who you had tonight?
Yeah, I got Cleveland.
Cleveland?
I believe I have Cleveland as well.
All right. So,
clean sweep on the Browns. We'll talk a little Monday Night Football tomorrow morning. Garrett Richards' debut with the Padres will be one of the topics as well. We can continue the Caboo discussion if you'd like, coming to Petco Park, although I felt like we kind of settled that a little bit today, but maybe you disagree.
Let's wait and see.
Yeah, it's all coming up. That'll do it for us. Thanks to The Hammer, our assistant producer, executive producer Paul Reindl. For Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Jim Rome Show is coming up next. Coach at noon today. Stay tuned. Lots more coming up on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.